Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. Happy holiday season, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Hope you're enjoying it. Most importantly, time with family. We talk about the NBA. That's what we're going to be doing here. I am joined on the East Coast, the West Coast, I guess, of the East Coast, though, from Fort Myers, just back from the G League Showcase in Las Vegas, and I think you went to Phoenix before that to see a game, is our front office insider, Bobby Marks. How was your visit to Vegas, Bobby?
The visit to, I would say it's probably the most under-the-radar event, Brian, the G League Showcase, and I would say that is the unofficial date when the trade season starts, when teams start laying out their plans. But it was a productive couple days there.
We're going to talk about that, what you learned while you were there. But also joining us from San Francisco, the heart of the NBA for the last 5 years, and now, well, not, is Nick Friedel. How are you holding it together in this interim season for the Warriors, Nick?
Not well, B. not well. It's not the same as it once was, but maybe next year it'll get revved
great,
up
Bob.
Again. But, it's not the same right now watching the old Warriors, but there is hope on the horizon, I think.
But you are getting to, watch more of the league, so you are using
seeing a
your
lot
time.
Of the league. A lot of the league night to night, that is for sure.
One of the things we've seen over the last few days is the Milwaukee Bucks have had just a couple of more just fantastic performances. Obviously, the win over the Lakers, just a high-quality win. Giannis hitting three-pointers. And I'm looking at this team, and I'm trying to decide, I mean, with where their record is and the fact that they've beaten the Clippers twice and beaten the Lakers and they've pretty much beaten everybody they've played with the exception of the Celtics. They've only played them once and they lost, and they don't play them again until after the new year. I'm trying to determine whether I could see this team winning the championship. I know that sounds like a strange question because you look at their record and it's just spectacular. They are a team that is totally built to support Giannis. It is, you know, their talent, their players were all brought in with Giannis in mind. They have very clear systems that they run offensively and defensively. They have a ton of shooters. They have good depth. They are great at home. They are a quality team on the road. They have a lot going for them, Bobby. And as I've, you know, we've talked on recent podcasts, I see them behind the Lakers and Clippers. But maybe I shouldn't. And I'm having this discussion sort of openly as I'm thinking about it. Bobby, should I be looking at them and saying that is a championship team?
I don't know if we're ready to put them there. I think people who are listening to this will probably say, what, 27-4 and, you know, the run they've been on. I'm still a little bit battle scarred, Brian, from the playoffs last year against Toronto.
Me too.
And I look at this. I think there's a big difference between a team built for the regular season versus a team that's built for the playoffs. I think the two teams in LA are built for the playoffs. You know, when you have the two franchise level players with LeBron and AD and Paul George and Kawhi and with the Clippers there, and I think you can. I think where the Bucks are right now is their depth is so good that they can sustain an injury to an Eric Bledsoe or to a Chris Middleton, and they can go 10 deep here. Where, you know, when we get into the playoffs here, that's you're not playing, you know, 10 or 11 guys here. You know, usually going 8 or 9. So, are they good enough to get out of the Eastern Conference? Yeah, I have them get into an NBA Finals here, but I still look back on that Toronto series. You know, the inability to kind of close out games. You know, yes, we've talked about Giannis at length, you know, developing his three-pointer. But until I see it in a money game when it really matters, not an L.A. Laker game on a Thursday night, I'm still a little skeptical here.
Guys,
you know,
I'm very skeptical.
You know, Giannis is having a great year, Nick. I mean, you know, he's even better than he was last year.
It doesn't matter, B. It doesn't matter to me. As far as can this team not only get out of the East, but go into the finals and win four games, I'm not buying it at all. And I have never really believed in this Bucks squad's ability to get to that point. I've always thought they were very good. I think Giannis is incredible. But when you get into a playoff series and the entire game plan is going to be make somebody besides Giannis beat you, I'm exactly where Bobby is. Prove it. Who is that second player on that team? And I like Chris Middleton a lot. But who's the second player who's going to take that pressure off Giannis? And Giannis is getting even better. If he starts hitting from three, it's going to be a sad time for the rest of the league. But again, you're not measuring how many wins they're going to have. You're measuring, can you get this team into the finals and then win it? And I just don't believe that they are good enough because I don't believe they have that second player and that third player, because you need those complementary pieces to help in the biggest of moments. I don't buy Eric Bledsoe as the starter on a title team. And I just don't think that as good as Middleton is, that he can be that second guy. So, no. The answer to your question to me is very clear still. The regular season is nice, but the postseason games are different. And Milwaukee right now just doesn't have those other pieces around them that they're going to need.
Well, there's two things that I think comes up with me when I look at them. Number one, Giannis hasn't taken a playoff series by the neck yet. Like we saw, like I think players of his capability can do. We saw Kobe do it. We saw LeBron do it. We've seen Durant do it. I think he's in that class where he can take a playoff series, maybe even one he's not supposed to win, and just push it the other way. And I do believe that he will have that moment. It hasn't happened. And so before, you know, that happened with early in LeBron's career, and it all changed when he upset the Pistons in his fourth season. Giannis is a little bit past that, but you know he's not much past it. And so I'm waiting for that. The other thing is, and Bobby, I don't know if this is fair because every single one of these situations has a explanation behind it, and also, you know, he was running up against LeBron. But you know, Mike Budenholzer has not in the playoffs. We have not seen his teams play their best basketball. And, you know, when he was in Atlanta, you know, he was you know, the higher seed a few times and lost. But again, you know, it's, he was running into LeBron quite a bit. But there are people out there who question whether Bud is the kind of coach in the postseason he is in the regular season. I don't know if it's fair. I probably don't have enough information to know, but that's another factor that I think is, people are taking under advisement when they chart where the Bucks are going to go.
Well, and that Atlanta team that he had Brian back in, 14, 15, you know, that team ran through the East, right? I mean, for the regular season, at least.
And then they got swept.
And then they got swept, right? They got swept against in Cleveland. And that was a little bit different than, certainly than Milwaukee, because they didn't have a Giannis, but they had, you know, what did they have, four All-Stars that year that they sent to to New York. And then, you know, and then certainly last year with the body of work and that, going up 2-0 in that, in that Toronto series, then to lose 4-0 and I think get out coached in that. So yeah, I mean, I think Bud is certainly a really good coach, but the jury is probably still out on him as far as when we get to, getting his team kind of to that, you know, to that next stage.
Yeah. And the, The thing about those Hawks teams was they were as close to the San Antonio Spurs as kind of we've seen. They share the ball, shoot terrific from the outside, play really good defense together. It was kind of the case to be made that you don't need an ultimate superstar to win at the highest level. And then the ultimate superstar slapped him down several times in a row without letting him even win a game. And last year, you know, now he does have the ultimate superstar. So, you know, I mean, on one hand, you could say, hey, listen, how can you possibly judge a team that doesn't have LeBron versus a team with LeBron? Well, now he does have the best player in most series. By the way, speaking of the coaching in that Eastern series, Eastern Finals last year, Nick Nurse is pulling up some magic, despite a bunch of key players, Siakam and who else is out right now? Siakam is out, and they're missing three key players: Gasol, Siakam,
and who else? Who's the third guy? They got Serge and they got Kyle back.
Norm.
Anyway, Norm Powell.
Norm Powell. Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah. Yeah. I tell you what, Brian. There's a lot of good coaching jobs going on right now. I mean, I know we're kind of just jumping off subject here, but Kenny Atkinson in Brooklyn, you know, like, I mean, taking that roster that's, you know, really scaled down with the injuries. I mean, everyone's calling for Billy Donovan's head a year ago or 2 years ago, and what he's been able to do with in Oklahoma City. And sometimes, I think sometimes coaches like when there's just less around, when, you know, when you're basically dealing with, you know, seven or eight guys that you have instead of, you know, trying to, you know, force minutes on, you know, 12 guys, certainly like in Boston with Brad Stevens has been able to do.
Yeah, well, the Thunder pulled themselves back to 500. The Raptors have had two or more of their key players hurt pretty much the entire season. Lost Kawhi Leonard, obviously, and now they're still winning. And on Sunday, for the first time, I think, in more than a decade, a team down 30 points. They were down 30 points in the late in the third quarter, come back to win in regulation. I mean, that's crazy. And by the way, he got some of it going with a diamond and one full court press, something you see in high school. And remember that last year in the finals, he broke out the box and one. At times on Steph Curry, and has played the box and won a little bit this year. So he is pulling out all kinds of gimmicks to squeeze out wins. That just should be noted what's going on there. But to get back to the Bucks, you know, they made the decision not to re-sign Malcolm Brogdon, but they re-signed George Hill, and George Hill is, if he's not leading the league in three-point shooting, he's in the top two or three. And even though Brogdon is playing great, they have a first round pick and two second round picks from that deal that they could potentially use to bolster this team later this season or even into the future. I don't even fault their roster moves. I think, you know, they paid Chris Middleton a lot of money, but they didn't really have a choice. Like, there's not one thing I can say about this team that is bad, but at the same time, I'm not ready to look at them as a champion, and maybe that's my mistake. Maybe we're all wrong. But
they committed to Eric Bledsoe. I mean,
well,
come
that was
on Eric was, Bledsoe in the playoffs. This is the problem that the league is having, and this is why they're offering potentially $1 million to players to care about an in-season tournament that I don't think many players care about. I don't even care what the Bucks do over the next few months, as long as Giannis stays healthy, because I know they're a really good regular season team. I wish you could hit the fast forward button and say, okay, here are the playoffs, let's go. Let's see what you got. And that is the problem. It's like, okay, the Bucks have proven where they're at. Giannis is getting it even better. Let's see if the rest of this core of the group can help in the playoffs without Brogdon. Let's see if Eric Bledsoe can take the next step. But when you're saying, I don't see a move that you can fault, I do. Eric Bledsoe. Eric Bledsoe,
yeah,
in the playoffs.
Yeah, that was a little bit too much money to give to him, and the fact that they extended him. But it's not like he's a terrible player.
He's not, but he's not. Is he the championship guard on a title team?
Hey, before we move on, just a quick shout out to Adrian Wojnarowski, who is doing some great work over at the Woj Pod. Last week, he spoke to Trae Young about his transition to the NBA and what's allowed his star to shine so quickly, as well as the Hawks' rebuilding process. It's some process. I look like a fool on that one. And about spending time partying with Baker Mayfield back in the Oklahoma days. I could go on and on about Baker Mayfield as a Browns fan, but I will not. So if you're interested, you can head on over to your favorite podcast player and subscribe to the Woj Pod. And while you're there, leave him a review to let him know what you think, because Woj is relentless and always looking for ways to get better. And I'm sure he'll be reading that review. Woj likes nothing more than to read reviews. And in general, we would love for you to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast here at the Hoop Collective. We always appreciate that. Write whatever you want. I won't read it, but somebody very high up at ESPN will read it and give me instructions on what to do. That's the way it works. Please, we do always appreciate the subscribe, rate, and reviewing. Okay, so Bobby, you just got back from the G League Showcase. Now, I know that, you know, Nick referenced some of the details from the Adam Silver midseason tournament concept leaked while that was going on. But you definitely heard a bunch of other things there. What were some of the things that you heard in Vegas that you found pretty interesting?
Well, I think the first thing was, and this wasn't even, you know, it wasn't a question that when I went out there was going to pose to teams. It was really just kind of, what just kind of came up in conversation was basically the demise of Blake Griffin in Detroit. And, you know, we're almost 2 years to the anniversary when the Pistons under, you know, Stan Van Gundy, under that former management group there, went out and got Blake in year one of that max contract. I understood the concept. I think we all understood the concept where you were never going to be able to go get a marquee free agent, an all-star level free agent there with cap space. You go out and you trade Tobias Harris and a lottery pick and Avery Bradley, some other players in that deal. But the big question, Brian and Nick, was always going to be health, right? Like, if Blake couldn't hold up to, you know, the standards of his play because of his prior injuries or an injury coming, that was going to be a doomsday scenario. And I don't know if we're quite there yet, doomsday, but you watch Blake Griffin now and, you know, he is a shell of himself. You know, the big thing I got from there is that, you know, yes, his best days are in his rearview mirror, but teams are now saying, you know, hey, this guy's never going to play 60 games in a season because of where he is condition-wise. He played the other night, I think Wednesday night, but then has missed two games in a row, one with a sore knee again, and then he had the flu. It's hard for him to string together consecutive games to play. And, you know, they're on the hook for this year and two more years after. He's got a player option in 21-22 that, you know, for $38 million that, you know, he's not opting out of. So I think that was kind of the big takeaway as far as one of the big takeaways is kind of the, you know, certainly the demise of Blake Griffin and where this Piston team goes, because it is not good there right now. And you've got, you know, Andre Drummond, you know, he's got a player option coming up. That's another big decision they have. They have not drafted well at all. They've missed out on a lot of opportunities there. And they've been bailed out a lot by Derrick Rose, you know, who I like Derrick Rose as a player, and he certainly has rejuvenated his career. But if that's the case, that's setting yourself up for a failure down the road in the future.
Yeah, you know, they really wanted to make the playoffs, which they did. They'd made that year, that for the year they made the trade, they made the playoffs, I'm fairly certain. Unless I'm completely having a brain fart. And you know, Dwayne Casey, when he came in last year, put Blake in a real playmaking role that ended up leading to an all-star appearance for him. It wasn't like, I think it was his first all-star game in like maybe 3 or 4 years. And part of that was injury related. And the fact that he went from the West to the East. But, you know, a year ago he had a terrific season. But it wasn't the short term that was the worry about that contract. It was the fact that they gave him 5 years. And remember, to do a little path back, the Clippers were on the fence about whether to give him the fifth year. He scheduled a very publicly scheduled a free agent meeting with the Phoenix Suns, and then the Clippers acquiesced and gave him a full 5 year, $170 million max. From the moment he signed it, it was like, wow, that's a big commitment to a guy who's had serious issues, especially with his knees. And they traded him within 6 months as they really began their total rebuild, which has borne pretty good fruit. And, you know, the thing about it was you know, the concern about that, that long term, you know, what was the back end of that deal going to look like? And the Clippers or the Pistons were well aware. They just didn't think that the back end would be now. He's having the worst year of his career. He's only played in a little more than a dozen games because of issues. He has been playing in back to backs because of some knee problems. I don't know if he's going to play in back to backs anywhere going forward. And this just extenuates the Pistons' problems, which is they're sort of stuck in the sand. And this was an opportunity they hoped to step up a little bit. And now Blake is struggling, and they are struggling, and they don't really have a heck of a lot of ways to get better because they're just good enough to probably avoid getting a good pick, but just bad enough to where spending this kind of money on a player doesn't make a lot of sense, and it's pretty hard to trade him because of his knee issues and because he's got so much left on his contract. Nick, it is really surprising just how bad Blake is struggling this year. Everything on his statistical measure is down, and he just hasn't looked very healthy when he has played.
B, this part of the conversation is called "The Pistons Are Screwed." That's what this is. Because I'm with you, and I'm with Bobby. I don't see the fix. And I was there that day when Stan Van Gundy made that deal. That was when I was bouncing around the Midwest. And I had gotten to Detroit, and I still remember Blake Griffin telling me that he found out he was traded on Twitter, and he was not happy about it. And he was still, as the press conference was going on and seeing him in those first few games, he couldn't believe that he was out of L.A. I think he was shell-shocked. I think there's a part of him, frankly, that still is shell-shocked. Like, what am I doing here? And this is what happens when you draft poorly. And guys, even more, and Bobby, I know you can attest to this in what you've seen in the league for so long. The worst thing that can happen in the NBA is when you sign a guy to a massive deal and that guy can no longer perform at that level. And it happened quicker than the Pistons thought. It happened quicker than Stan Van Gundy thought, because he thought that that team was going to the playoffs that first year and Blake Griffin would do it, and it didn't happen. And Reggie Jackson's been hurt, and he had issues the last couple of years. And like Bobby said, now you're relying on Derek, who has had a nice bounce back year. But Derek's had plenty of his own health issues. This is just a team going nowhere. And they're just good enough sometimes to be just good enough for irrelevancy. And that's the issue. When you have big money deals that don't come to fruition and players that can't live up to those deals anymore, these are almost always the circumstances that you find yourself in. And the Pistons are just going to have to wear it for the next couple of years.
And Brian, what I've learned is that, you know, when, especially, you know, in New Jersey and Brooklyn for so long, is that when you do miss out on the draft a lot and you miss out on, you know, some of these players who, to build it organically, maybe how teams like Denver has been able to do it. It just puts a lot of internal pressure on you to go out and swing for a high risk move. And I think the Blake trade was kind of like that savior behind trade, right? We knew like there was a lot of pressure for that team to get into the playoffs, to make a big splash for that owner there. You put Blake and Drummond together. You've got your bigs of the future here. And when it fails and it doesn't work, then, you know, there's casualties, and there was casualties with Stan and Jeff Bauer in that group. And now you've got, you know, Ed Stefanski and Dwayne Casey there kind of cleaning up a lot of the different things here, and those are the high risk moves that you think it looks good when you do it, but there's so many long term consequences, not in year one or two, but kind of years three and four and five.
I'm glad you brought up the Nuggets real quick, because I do hear a lot of people talk about how the Nuggets are a model rebuild. But the one thing I want to point out is that the Nuggets missed the playoffs, I think it was five consecutive years. And four of those years, they had losing records. They were the hard luck team that a couple years ago, where they lost on the last night of the regular season to the Timberwolves and lost out on that playoff bid. And they missed the playoffs with like a 45 or 46 win team. But you look at the Nuggets, they were 5 years to get back there. I mean, you talk about the process in Philadelphia. You know, they didn't have a nice name for it in Denver. But it was just as long or longer to get back. And even now they are still, you know, challenged to, you know, they're still struggling to get to the very top. Not struggling, but they're in an all out fight to get to the level, just like the Sixers are, to get to that championship level. So when you talk about rebuilds, I mean, you know, it's a major process to commit to, and that's why some teams just don't want to commit to it. But when you look across the league right now, I think one of the things you see is there's not a lot of teams in the middle. There's a handful to eight what I think are really good teams. I think there is a fair amount of number of teams that could dream right now of winning the championship. That number is bigger than it has been in the past. But there's not a lot of teams that are in the middle. There's teams that are seventh and eighth in the conferences that are below 500. You look at a team like the Thunder we mentioned earlier. I mean, you could say they're in the middle, but they have already picked their path. They just because they've had some legacy players, they're not terrible. But I don't see a whole lot of teams in the middle, which makes where the Pistons are. All the more difficult and all the more difficult. So, Bobby, if you were in the Pistons front office, what would you be thinking about what to do with Blake Griffin? You don't really have much of a choice but to sort of hold on to him, right, and hope that he gets healthy and rebounds?
Yeah, I think that's the only – I was talking to one team, and I said, like, you know, does he have any value? And they said, yeah, maybe if you want to swap him, try to swap him for John Wall. And I don't even think the Wizards would even do that, right? You know, you're basically trading – You're basically trading bad contracts for bad contracts here. And I think with the Wizards, with, you know, Hachimura, and if they keep Bertans, he's really not a need for Blake Griffin there. You basically have to hold out hope that he recovers. And then I think you turn it to what is the value of Andre Drummond? You know, can you turn him into three role players, right? Like the Rudy Gay, I always go back to the Rudy Gay trade of, 2013. Remember that in Toronto when that changed their season around, when they basically traded him for Grievous Vasquez and Patrick Patterson and guys like that, that kind of came in and gave them a lift there. But, the Drummond piece, I think, is going to be fascinating, guys, when we get closer to the deadline here, because let's face it, he is a favorite of the owner. And, you know, who is going to win the argument here? Is it going to be management or is it going to be ownership? Because if you don't do anything, he is probably going to cost you significantly. And then you are really stuck with Griffin and Drummond for the foreseeable future, paying these guys $70 million plus per year.
Yeah. What were some of the other things people were talking about in Vegas? That's an interesting one, Bobby.
Well, I think the one question, or is it, it was a two-part question, Brian and Nick, was the one player that teams could see moved before the deadline. And I was in Salt Lake City to see Orlando, Utah, and I've got no inclination that this player is going to be moved here, but is Evan Fournier, who's having, really probably the best year of his career, is probably the best player on the court right now, certainly with, you know, Vucevic injured. Aaron Gordon has been really up and down here. But Fournier's got a player option for next year at right around $17 million. He's averaging right around $20 million. As far as, is Orlando willing to commit big money towards him? So that was the one name. And then the other thing, Brian and Nick, was is that, you know, I asked the question, out of all the players who could be traded, what is that one player that you're willing to give up a lot for? You know, draft picks, young players, expiring contracts. Not everything, but close to a lot. And that was Jrue Holiday in New Orleans. And I think where you look at where Holiday is, you know, the ability to play point or two, back-to-back defensive player of the year, under contract through 21, 22's got a player option there. But that was the name that was thrown around that a couple teams mentioned, possibly Denver, right? Because we know they've got, you know, Gary Harris and they've got Malik Beasley. They can trade future picks out here. They've got some expiring contracts with Mason Plumlee here. So those are the two names that, you know, different questions, you know, who could be moved and what player you're willing to give up a lot for.
If Evan Fournier opts out, which I could see him doing because he's having the best year of his career, he's having the best shooting year of his career for sure and the best scoring year. What do you think Evan Fournier's market is? Evan Fournier? in the summer of 2020 when there's not a lot of money out there?
Well, it's funny. So the one team I talked to, and they didn't have cap space. He said, you know, hey, he's having a great year, but I wouldn't pay $20 million for him. You know, so it's like, it's interesting. Like the market for these guys is going to be, it's going to be tough, right? Montrezl Harrell, Evan Fournier, guys who could become free agents. You know, I heard someone mention Harrell could get $20 million. All right. From who? Right. Is it from Memphis? Is it from
the Clippers?
Atlanta, right? Cleveland. Charlotte, like, who is paying these guys that money there?
That's, you know, you brought up, on a previous podcast you were on, you brought up, Fred VanVleet, who sort of is in this same boat. Very, attractive player. Maybe more attractive than an Evan Fournier because he's younger. You know, Evan Fournier plays a position where, and shoots at a position where it's in demand. I wonder what the market for a guy like that, you know, a bunch of these guys who have these player options, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years, if you had any sort of season at all, you know, if you didn't miss the season with an injury, you were always not picking up your player option and going into the market because the market was just so fantastic. Now with this year, I don't know if we should assume that these player options, all these player options, like, you know, DeMar DeRozan's another one. His player option is enormous. He's still putting up good numbers, but you know, I just can't see anybody giving him the type of money that would be, especially San Antonio, giving him the type of money that would make sense for him not to pick up his player option. So, you know, we talk about the 2020 class being a little bit thin. It's going to get even more thin if these guys don't actually enter the market.
This whole conversation is depressing for any one of these teams if you're a fan, though. I mean, Bobby was telling us about how maybe Drummond can be turned into three role players and referencing the Rudy Gay deal. Then we go on to my Magic and Orlando. You want to talk about a team stuck in the middle. Where the hell are they going? And I like Steve Clifford. I think that he's a solid coach, but they don't have a star.
They went to the playoffs last year.
Well, whoopee, you know, where are they going towards a title?
They're a team that gets you to the 6 minute mark in the fourth quarter, up four, and then you click on the game at the end and you're down six. That's what they are.
With your head down.
I saw them in Salt Lake and they were up 98-92 and Donovan Mitchell and Bogdanovic took over. And I felt like I haven't been in the league in 5 years and I saw Jeff Weltman and John at the end of the game who was the head of their basketball operations. And I didn't want to say anything to Mike because I know how that feeling is, right? Like that, Jesus, what just happened here? Like the crowd's on their feet, and then it happened the other night, and the next night in Denver, they had another big lead, and the Nuggets came back and won that game.
But here we are, guys. This ties into everything. We're talking about potentially paying Montrez $20 million and Evan Fournier $20 million. This is the issue when you're one of these. Not bad teams, but not good teams in the middle. And you're like, all right, do I pay Fournier this money? Is he that much of a difference maker? It's another reminder that in order to win big in the NBA, you must have stars and at least one very, very great star. And the Magic don't have that. And that, as somebody who has watched the Magic my entire life, it's sad. You watch them and they play hard and they have nice pieces, but they haven't had a star since Dwight left. And they are in the middle of NBA nowhere.
The thing about the NBA, it's a zero-sum game. There are only so many wins and only so many losses. For every team that is rising, teams have to fall. For a team that is absolutely loaded with talent competing for a championship, there must be a team that is devoid of talent that has no chance to compete. This is one of the reasons why Adam Silver wants to create this midseason tournament and this play-in tournament at the end of the season. He wants to give teams something else to play for besides the gold trophy. He wants to give teams something else that their fans can get excited about and get behind. And he wants to sell more television properties, yes. He wants to invigorate, people consuming the product in the middle of the season, which is tepid right now. But that's really what it's about. That's, you know, people ask about why the NBA hasn't got rid of divisions. Well, one of the reasons they haven't got rid of divisions is because they still want teams to win it to be able to hang a banner. They still want the team to be able to say they won something. And that's important in a league where over the last decade and a half, you know, star players are only judged on championships. And it's one of the reasons why star players cluster, because if they don't get a championship, that NBA championship in June, they feel inadequate. And that's what it's a part of. You know, you see this in, we talk about European soccer all the time with Adam Silver's mindset. But this is true. You see teams in European soccer that are playing in a season, sort of a season within a season, and these tournaments that happen in the middle of the season, specifically the Champions League, where they will be totally out of it in their league, in their country league, even if their country league is the most important thing. But they are absolutely playing for the chance to win this most important thing in Europe, this Champions League, or vice versa. They get knocked out of their season-long tournament early in a disappointment, but they are in the thick of it in their country league. And that's what Adam is trying to create. And it's trying to stem. And, you know, I know that I look at it and say, I don't think people are going to care about this, but there's a reason behind it, Bobby, because Adam is trying to invigorate these markets that are stuck right now. Cause, you know, if there's a play-in tournament for a team, and I've talked about this, think about how interesting the Warriors would be right now if there was a play-in tournament. That's what this is about.
Well, you're right. And I think, you know, I think the big sell, Brian, is going to have to be probably to this next wave of young players, right? The Trae Youngs, the Donovan Mitchell, the Luka Doncic of the world here to sell this idea for this group, because I understand that the average player salary is, what, $9.5 million here. But as I said on Friday, like, half the league is making under $4 million, right? So there is certainly a nice bonus there where if you're going to win it, $1 million, I think how the proposal is that if we were doing it, you know, six groups, which is basically your divisions, and the winner out of the games played, as far as if it's 8 or 10 games played, is, you know, goes to this 8-team tournament, and then you get 2 wild cards. I think, you know, it's kind of a wait and see approach. I think the more I learn about it, I think the more I've kind of embraced it. I'm not fully quite there yet, but you're going to have to get everybody on board here, because, you know, let's face it, the ratings aren't great, right? And the ratings dictate the TV money, and the TV money dictates what these guys' player salaries are going to be, you know, down the road here. So it's interesting. You know, there's a lot to be kind of flushed out still here. But as I said, I think a lot of it, Nick, is you're going to have to sell it to, you know, to not just LeBron and AD and Kawhi and Paul George, is that you're going to have to sell it to the whole group here, because, you know, teams like, you know, people aren't watching Orlando. People aren't watching Charlotte. You know, yeah, people will watch when it's LA on Christmas night, right? But I don't know if people are going to be watching Denver, New Orleans later that night, right? No offense. So it's kind of, you know, as I said, you've got to sell this to this whole group.
Bobby, I couldn't agree with you more. And in this Warriors gap year, as I get to watch a hell of a lot more games than I ever would have in any years prior, I really am concerned. And all of our livelihood is based professionally in part on how well the league is doing. And I watch these games, and just the run-of-the-mill, the Suns-Blazers game earlier last week, and I'm just like, who is watching this? Besides the people in the bubble, the diehards and the gamblers, who is tuning in mid-December to watch this game? And I applaud, B, to your point about Adam Silver and trying to generate interest. I applaud Adam and whoever else is in the league office who's sitting there looking at the numbers, looking at the ratings that Bobby referenced, looking at the attendance figures in the league. Somebody stood up a few years ago and said, hey, everybody, we got a little problem here. People aren't tuning in to the run-of-the-mill NBA regular season game anymore. I just don't believe this is going to work. And, Bobby, this goes back to not only is it the buy-in of the LeBrons, and Russell Westbrook and Steph and Clay and KD, all those guys. I'm talking about as a fan. I'm 36 years old. I have watched basketball my entire life. I don't care about the possibility of an in-season tournament because my whole life, it was always based on who's going to win the title, who's going to get there in the end, and who are the teams that are going to challenge when the playoffs get rolling. I would have to recondition myself, and I'm not saying that I wouldn't if the product was compelling, but I read about this tournament. I read Woj's story a couple days ago, and I went, ah, whatever. It just doesn't resonate for me as a fan, and that's where I'd be very concerned if I were the league. But in watching these games, I mean, that's the issue. To me, the two fixes, clearly, guys, are you can't have any more back-to-backs, and you cut the number of games down. Now, what that magic number is, I'm still not sure. But you tell me why the casual fan is going to watch the Magic Jazz game in December.
I just want to make one thing here that, A, Nick is not the casual fan, and he doesn't even get lumped into like a diehard fan because his perspective and everyone's perspective is so different. And B, you're 36?
How old did you think I was?
Oh my God.
He had that voice when he was 12, though. I'm not kidding either. He had that. So let me.
I was 6'1" and had chest hair before any one of my friends.
I know. He was dating a 20-year-old in 7th grade. Let me just say, somebody who about 5 years ago made a conscious decision to dial back my interest in football for various reasons. I wish I could completely unhook myself from college football because it's more exploitive than the NFL, but I can't. I'm not quite there yet. I'm still a big Ohio State fan. I wish I could quit them, but I can't. And I began to watch soccer, specifically English Premier League soccer. And you're talking about this being strange to you, Nick, and it was strange to me too. The concept that, number one, that there could be multiple tournaments that you play at the same time, that on a Tuesday you're playing a team in one event, and then literally on Saturday could be playing the same team in a different event. It seems so preposterous to me, as did the concept there's no playoffs for the Premier League. You end the season and it's just your point total and that's it. But as I pay attention to it, I understand it now. It didn't take long, and the key is the players have the buy-in. If the players have the buy-in, and that's why they're trying to basically bribe them, this concept, if the players care about it, the fans will care about it. If the players give their all, like you see in conference tournaments, of course the NCAA tournament, but the conference tournaments is the one thing that I think the NBA is like trying to capture, then it will matter. And, you know, I talk about the Premier League. The Premier League is the highest revenue league in the world. The Premier League is less than 30 years old. I think it's 25 years old. It hasn't been around. I mean, soccer obviously is a long-standing tradition in England, but the organization of what the Premier League is not that old. It started in 1992. So I don't disagree with what you're saying about this being a major change, and that that you're feeling right out of hand is that this isn't going to work, and it may not. But Adam Silver and the folks at the NBA, they are smart people. There is a reason why they're doing this. They're trying to make a fundamental change that will alter the way we perceive the NBA, and they're doing it because they do see the warning signs that you're talking about. And it was with anything like piloting a cruise ship. You can't just whip the wheel over and change course. You got to have a lot of thought and process on changing it. So I'm not saying I agree with everything, but I understand the methodology. I want to take a couple steps back. Bobby, you were talking about being in Salt Lake. Last week, Tim McMahon, I don't think he came up with it on the moment, but on this podcast last week, McMahon pitched a trade where he said, what would happen if the Jazz traded Mike Conley, who has been a problem there and is now dealing with a hamstring injury? Not a problem, but just unsuccessful. What if they traded him for Chris Paul? And we talked about it for a second. We kind of moved past it. And subsequently, I've had several people bring up to me, that trade makes a lot of sense when you start thinking about it. What do you think about that concept? Now, again, just for the aggregators, this is not something we're hearing is going to in discussion or happening or whatever. Just something we're kicking around. What do you think about that, Bobby?
My thought is that when Donovan and Rudy are free in 21 free agents, that's a lot of money for this, you know, organization to commit to. I know that Chris Paul, that will be the last year there. So, but you could have, you know, $30 million each with Gobert, and you could have basically $100 million tied up in three players. And can they, you know, financially, you know, do that? You know, just seeing them, it's funny, Brian. I saw them Tuesday night against Orlando with, and when Conley got hurt. I saw them also last year, a stretch of games when Ricky Rubio was out. I think it was the first week of January. And Donovan Mitchell at point guard. I mean, this team's a better team when he's at point guard than with Conley. They've won, I think, five in a row here, and it just feels like they're more efficient. So, yeah, I understand it, you know, as far as, you know, I mean, Chris has played really well in OKC. You know, the money matches up here pretty close. It's just a matter of kind of, do you want to take on money in 21-22? But the other thing is here is, like, you know, when Conley comes off, you're basically going to be stuck with that roster anyway to go out and get a point. You won't be able to get a point guard unless it's Donovan Mitchell there. So it's interesting. You know, I think it's an interesting thought, but the Conley signing or the trade for has not worked out. And one team mentioned something to me that, you know, I think we kind of take for granted was that when you get these older players, and I saw it with Pierce and Garnett in Brooklyn here, but they were a little bit older. When you get these players that have been with these organizations for a long time in a trade, the adjustment is so hard because half their heart is still where they left, you know. And I think with, you know, Mike being in Memphis so long and now going to a different environment, you know, he still bleeds a little bit of Memphis here.
Well, you're talking about the Donovan Mitchell, you know, I presume a max contract in another year. I was talking to a GM earlier this week, and he was referencing the 25% max, which is the max, your first max that you can sign, which is 25% of the cap versus the 35% max, which is what, like, Chris Paul is on now and LeBron and those guys. He called the 25% max the, quote, fun max. Because relatively speaking, you know, I laughed out loud. I was like, I'm going to start using that, the fun max, because the guys are younger. Most players do their biggest damage in their second max contract. I'm making a broad generalization. And the second max contract is where the stars typically like to move around. But the fun max. So I don't know. Maybe Donovan Mitchell on the fun max isn't as bad. But I see your point. I think what it comes down to, and we talked about this when we were spitballing Drew Holiday trades the other day, Nick. I can't see how this season is going to go. There's still a lot of uncertainty. And if you're a team like Denver, or even a team like Utah, or we talked about Miami, could you go all in now when people are sort of holding back for 2021 a little bit? Or, you know, could you go after something like that? And this would be sort of an all-in trade for Utah, thinking that Chris Paul could do it. I don't necessarily think that that's the way they normally operate. But, you know, there's still a team out there that may be bold that could sort of distance itself or make up a lot of ground on the pack.
But do we believe that any of these guys are enough to take whatever that team is to the step where you go, all right, yeah, they could win a title? And I'm speaking as someone who wholeheartedly believed, much to the anger of a lot of Laker fans out there, that when all was said and done in the regular season, that Utah would rise above, that the Conley move was going to work, Donovan Mitchell would take that next step alongside Gobert, and they had a legit chance at a title. And now I'm listening to this discussion, and I'm thinking, Chris Paul's contract still? We think that Chris Paul right now is that much of an upgrade over Conley, where you would look at the Jazz differently and say, all right, yep, maybe they could come out of the East, or at least maybe get to the West, or excuse me, the West, and maybe they could come out, or at least get to the West Finals. I don't believe that. I think the Jazz just have to hope that Conley gets healthy and he could fit better. As for Holiday, B, I like him a lot, but I don't think he is the kind of difference maker who takes a team that's near title contention and you say, yep, I think that team could potentially be...
What if you trade him? What if you acquire him and he's your third best player?
All right, give me the scenario. Give me the team that you would plug him on where you would think...
Miami, where you still have Bam and you still have Jimmy Butler.
See, Denver, and here's the
where
difference.
You still have Jokic and Murray.
And there's the difference for me. I like Miami a lot as a regular season team, and I feel like our discussion here is kind of coming full circle from the beginning. I am a big fan of Jimmy's. I have been for a long time, but I don't believe that when you are setting up a playoff roster and you know that all the pressure is going to come down on Jimmy Butler, that Bam, or in this case, Holiday, can make you that much better where you think, okay,
keep in mind, they didn't make the playoffs last year. If they become a team that's challenging for the finals, that's a hell of a catapult forward. Especially,
yeah, but they're right up at the top now. I mean, who in the East, this speaks to your point, though. It's like, okay.
That's my point. There's a three-way tie right now for second place in the East. And Milwaukee, we've just talked about, you think that there's some softness there. You make a move, and all of a sudden, maybe you head yourself, you know, by a nose, finish it. And if the Heat could somehow do something where they went from out of the playoffs to in the finals, even if they don't win the finals, I mean, what an amazing step forward for them. You know, Denver.
Well, all right, this is just my opinion. I don't believe that Miami's good enough. I like them as a regular season team, and they play their butts off. And Jimmy has always been better in
structure. But what about with Drew Holiday? Would they be good enough to win the East in 2020? Not 2021, 22, now, this year.
No, I don't believe so. I like Holiday,
Bobby,
but I don't believe good enough.
No, and here, and this is ties into another thing that was talked about out in Vegas that you guys are talking about right now, kind of ties in, is that like teams are like saying like, hey, I know for TV wise, it's important for you guys to talk about the class of 21, right? How it's going to be that next great loaded class. He's like, but they were like, I think you guys might be overestimating it a little bit here. And we've heard all about Miami trying to keep the powder dry as far as for Giannis or one of these big names come 21 with the cap space and stuff. But when you really look at it, guys, like LeBron and AD in LA, Paul George and Kawhi in LA, like those are your four bigger names. Certainly Giannis, we'll know about him this summer, what happens with the Supermax. But like if everybody stays pat, And the LA guys are kind of at their final destination, right? That's their preferred destination. They're championship level teams here.
Like, I wouldn't make that assumption.
What's that?
I mean, I mean, yes, today Kawhi and Paul George are happy, but you know, Kawhi is bailed on two teams, and so is Paul George. Right. So, I mean, yes, I think today that looks that way, but I'm not going to sit here and try to pretend like I'm going to know what the lay of the land is in 2021. But okay, go ahead.
That was kind of like, so if you can go out and get a Drew Holiday, as we talked about earlier, and even though it's going, he may eat into your cap space for, you know, 2021, and it can take you from maybe an Eastern Conference semifinal team to, you know, maybe a Eastern Conference final or perhaps an NBA final team, then I think that's something that you probably have to consider, because I think he's good enough to kind of do that. It's just a matter of kind of what the price is going to be.
Well, I guess that's with any trade, what's the price going to be? But, all right. Well, thank you guys. Hope you have a good holiday season. Enjoyed it. When we emerge from this holiday season, we will be sort of in full-fledged NBA mode in the league. Or, you know, football season's coming to an end here, and the NBA starts to take more of a center stage. Hopefully Christmas Day will yield some good games, yield some good some fan feedback, because the NBA certainly needs it. Thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Have a great one.